the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, and we welcome you back. Thanks for joining us. Time for more of what I would call the best in money information, the Bucket Strategy Investing Program, longtime friend of everyone on both radio and television. Brain Trust standing by, ready to help you out this hour. Professor Rick Plum here with me. I'm Johnny Dean from Lucia Capital Group. Now, this hour, oh, this is fun. This we could do for days and days on end, but we won't. But we're going to start off with a discussion on annuities and how these products actually work. We get a lot of questions on these. Callers, emailers, people in person. When it comes to annuities, confusion just seems to reign. All right, whether it's purposefully misleading marketing, maybe a lack of knowledge about the products themselves on the part of those recommending them. Yeah, we've seen that. Maybe some combination of those and other factors. The consumer is often left with more questions than answers. Not a good thing when you're dealing with your money. So we're going to try to straighten all that out as best we can in just a couple of moments or so. Lines open right now. That's right. If you want to give us a call, do so with your money questions. 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. Our phones, or simply go over to the wealthed.com website to send us an email. wealthed.com. Click on the Find Your Answer link there near the top of the page. We'll answer those emails right here on the program. Comments, questions, whatever it is you happen to have. Professor Plum joins us now from Lucia Capital Group. You do need to get a strategy. You need one that addresses each of your needs, one that aims to make sure your retirement goals are covered the first time. Call our advisory team at Lucia Capital Group at this number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. What do you need? You need a bucket strategy, all right? The Brain Trust advisors will put one together for you. You talk to any of them about your financial future. Give yourself some peace of mind. 800-644-1150 is the number. Our number here in studio, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We're live, of course. Give us a call with any money question that you have, whether it's on annuities or whatever it happens to be. We got the Brain Trust ready to answer those questions for you. Now, I got a lot of things to say, Professor Plum, on fixed annuities, index annuities, how they're taxed, some of these structured annuities, capital, whatever you want to call them, structured capital. So depending on which way we want to go, I still have to tell you this. Now, I want you to take careful notes on this. You ready?
Yeah, I've got my no-dos ready.
Okay. Slap yourself around. Hey, investors are advised to carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, and charges and expenses of the variable annuity and its underlying investment options before investing. Well, the applicable variable annuity prospectus contains this and other important information about the variable annuity and its underlying investment options. So please, please read the prospectus carefully before investing.
Now, that was geared specifically towards a variable annuity.
Yes.
But you can, the same can basically be said about any investment product that you're dealing with or any annuity. The only difference is a fixed annuity, index annuity, which are, an index annuity is a subset of fixed annuities. They don't have a prospectus, but you really should read through the material that shows you how that interest is, what's going on with your contract. And if you don't understand it, call us because we can help you understand what's actually happening. Now, the taxation is a little bit more difficult from trying to read the legalese in any one of those, but those are easy to understand. But how annuities actually work can be a mystery to a lot of people.
They do.
And you really do need to know certain things on a variable annuity, the fees. On any annuity, the surrender period, how the surrender charge works, access to the money. All those things are really important. It may be even more important than what's happening inside the annuity as far as how much you're earning or not earning.
Yeah, so let's just break this down very quickly. In the old days, and I don't know how long ago the old days were, but...
The 1400s.
Originally, yeah, what you did was you took a chunk of money,
uh-huh,
you handed it to an insurance company, and you said, start giving me some of that money back.
You bought a pension.
You start giving me this money back on a quarterly, year, I don't, whatever it is.
Semi-annual, annual, or monthly basis.
Right. You hand me this money. Now, if you run out of my money, you dig into your own pocket and you keep giving me that money. If I run out of time...
You keep the rest.
The money is yours.
So you're promising to pay me X amount of dollars for as long, the historical definition was a life annuity. I give the insurance company X amount of dollars. They promise to pay me Y amount per month for the rest of my life. If my life is 1 month long, that's how long they pay me. If I live to be 120, they keep paying me. So they're obviously on the hook and hoping I die soon. I'm looking that I want to live a long time to try to make as much money out of that particular investment. I want to live a long time for other reasons too. But from an investment standpoint, the longer I live, the more I make. The less time that I live, the more the insurance company potentially makes. That was the definition of an annuity. That was the historical idea of annuity. Now, payout annuities like that don't have to be a lifetime. They can be specific time horizons. They can be 5-year, 10-year, 20-year. And so when those are called term certain. So you can buy them and say, pay me X amount of dollars per month for the next 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20. Select a time horizon. And whether I live or die, the insurance company is going to pay out that monthly amount for that period of time. If I live longer than that, they're going to stop paying me at the end of that period. If I don't make it that long, somebody, an heir that I have designated, will receive the income for that period of time. And we can start combining these payout methods, life only with a certain time period, just in case. So because most people on the annuities don't like the idea that if I get hit by the Mack truck, 2 days into it, the insurance company keeps all the money. So what we can do is we can add these term certains to a life annuity that says, it's going to pay me for the rest of my life, but if I die way too soon, it's going to continue paying for X amount of time. So we can tailor these, but you have to understand what it is you're buying. Obviously, anything that puts the insurance company on the hook for a longer period of time is going to reduce the payment to you. So you have to look at what's, if it's a 5-year annuity. Now, right now, with today's interest rates, I think they should outlaw 5-year annuities because 5-year term certain immediate annuities, because the cost up front, the interest rates, what the insurance can do, you're really probably not even getting back your own money over that period of time.
I mean, you could lose money over a 5-year period of time.
The cumulative payment may not even be what you gave the insurance company, but you got a guarantee of income. Of course, if you just put it in a bank account, you could have done the same thing.
Yeah, how good is that if it stops after 5 years?
Well, it's okay for somebody who is completely not trustworthy when it comes to spending money. So we see this a lot on estates, setting it up for beneficiaries who we want to give them some money each month, but we don't want them having access to the lump sum.
Yeah.
Because they will be out of money in about a week if they give them a lump sum.
Yeah.
And so it has to do with understanding what you're buying. But so the old-fashioned immediate annuity was where you give them money, they promise to pay you for some period of time, your life, a joint life between you and somebody else, a period certain where it's going to last that long no matter what happens to you. So there's lots of ways to do those. And the taxation of those was a little bit different than the typical taxation of annuities, because they're giving you a little bit of interest and principal on every payment. So not 100% of the money you're receiving is taxable. It's not 100% return of principal. It's not 100% interest. It's a combination of the two of them based on some mathematical factors. So it actually created in the past, when interest rates were a little higher, a fairly tax-efficient way to create an income. I give the insurance company a block of money, $100,000, and they promise to give me $10,000 a year for the next, and I have a 18-year life expectancy. Those are old numbers, by the way. We can't get that right now.
Yeah.
So each payment, although I'm getting $10,000 a year, I may only be paying tax on three of it. And so, I'm getting, quite a bit of money for not as much in the taxation department. So it was a fairly tax-efficient way to do things. Right now, it's even more tax-efficient because there's very little earning component to it. It's very light on the earnings. And that's the problem with that particular type of an annuity today, because you're really not going to earn much, if anything, over the time that you have left. If you're young and you do a life annuity, you may get 3 or 4% over a normal to longer than expected life expectancy. I don't know. Locking it in for 20 years to get 3%, it doesn't sound all that hot to me. But you have to actually be able to work a calculator, a financial calculator, to understand what your real rate of return is.
Yeah, and how is anybody supposed to know this stuff, by the way?
Besides calling the show?
Well, yeah, call the show. 877-PLANNER will tell you all about it. Or just tune in and keep listening.
But, unfortunately, people confuse the payout. Like in my example where you're getting $10,000 on $100,000, that's a 10% payout. You mean I'm earning 10%? No, you are not earning 10%. They're giving you your own money, really. I mean, if you die in 10 years, all you've gotten back is your own money.
You got zero.
You got nothing from a return standpoint. And so we have to look at, based on expectations of lifetime, you're 65 and you expect to live to 85. Well, if you actually do live to 85, this contract will pay you this much money over this period of time. You invested this to get that. What is my real rate of return? That's where a financial calculator can help you determine what it is. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just nice to know. Now, some people will look at the income and say, you know what? I don't care what I'm earning. I need that income. I need that discipline. I need that check every month. That's a great idea.
Yeah, so it really depends on your individual situation. Now, there are a couple of different types. We're going to talk about some of these as the hour progresses. Fixed annuities, you got the variable annuity types, and we'll tell you how they're marketed and what they really mean when they tell you what they tell you on the marketing materials. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Lines open. Call now with your money questions. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Lines open right now for you. If you got a money question, comment, concern, whatever it is, maybe it's on annuities, maybe it's on something that you own, maybe you're not sure if you should own it. Here's another one, too. Can I make it to retirement? Here's what I've got. Tell me. Run the calculators for me. 877-PLANNER, you give us a call, and we will do that for you right here on the program. All right, so, Professor Plum. You gave an example. Now, not everybody may have heard it, but you were giving an example before the break about a fixed immediate annuity where mm-hmm. you hand the insurance company a sum of money. They give it some of your money back to you.
Every year.
Plus a little bit of what?
Well, potentially a little bit of earnings, assuming you live to the expected mortality or
yes.
assuming that the payment lasts for as long as, you know, it depends on the type of payout you're getting. But if it's a life annuity, they're going to base it on your life expectancy. So if you have a 15-year life expectancy, not your life expectancy, if you're 65, what the table says for a 65-year-old, a 75-year-old, yeah. an 85-year-old. And so they know about, based on the law of large numbers, how long a typical 65, 75, whatever the number is going to live. And so they look at it and say, if we're going to pay out this much money, that over that period of time is going to be, you're going to receive your money plus a little bit of interest, plus a lot of interest, depending upon what's going on. Not in today's world, you won't get a lot of interest. And so they're going to come up with how much of it each payment is earnings and how much of it is just a return of your own money.
Right. Now,
because it is a self-depleting type of an issue.
Now, here's what I hear. I hear the worst thing about annuities is that there are nothing but fees in there. Fees will eat into all of this, especially the people who don't, you know, like them.
Right.
They'll tell you. The biggest problem is fees. What sort of fees are we talking about on this type of annuity that you mentioned?
On an immediate annuity, the fee is impossible to determine because the reality is there are no fees, and then there could be a lot of fees in the fact that if it's a life annuity and you die after 1 month, they keep 90% of the money. That's a hefty fee. If you live to be 105, you make pretty good money, but there are no fees. It's all baked into what they're going to pay you per month. When people complain about fees on an annuity, they're talking about a completely different type of annuity. They're talking typically about a deferred annuity. The one we were just talking about was a payout annuity, an immediate annuity. You gave the insurance company a lump sum of money, that lump sum disappeared, and the only thing you have left is a guaranteed stream of payments. But they've also made a different type of annuity. Over the years, that type of annuity wasn't the main focus, and a deferred annuity. I give the insurance company $100,000, whatever the number is, and instead of them promising to pay me a monthly payment for the rest of my life, it has some growth or appreciation. I don't get an income from it yet. I am deferring taking income from it. But because it's an annuity, I get to get tax-free growth or tax-deferred growth as long as I'm not taking the money out. And there's lots of different types. Nowadays, there's lots of different types of deferred annuities. And so when we get into the fees, when people complain about the fees are on the variable annuity. The variable annuity is like a growth account. It's like a portfolio. You've got a lot of investment options underneath the variable annuity wrapper. But it also offers some bells and whistles that you can't get by just investing straight in a mutual fund or in the stock market or any other brokerage account. You have a death benefit on an annuity. And a death benefit, what it does is it says that if the market crashes, you put in your $100,000 and the market, because of the investment options you chose within the contract, go down in value and you die, your heirs will get back what you put into it, the death benefit, assuming you haven't taken any money out. We're just talking about a very clean, you put money in, you let it go, and then you die. Or they'll say whatever the anniversary value was, if it was higher than before. So if it
grows, are a bunch of different ways to do this.
But that death benefit puts the insurance company on the hook to potentially pay out more than just your cash value. And in, because of the death benefit, they charge you a fee. Now, are the fees outrageous? Depends on what you're asking about and depends on what your goal is. I've seen where people use these for older people that aren't very healthy because they want to protect the nest egg, but they still want the ability to maybe go for the growth and get a little bit. So they're protected on the downside if they die, and they can still go for growth. So in that case, it's not that bad of a deal. If from a pure growth standpoint, if all I want is growth, I'm not a big fan of the variable annuity because of the fees, because it takes away from my return, and because I don't want that. I mean, I've got a long-term time horizon, so that's what growth is all about, long-term time horizon. So fees are something to look at, but you're only going to find them in the variable annuity or a typical any other deferred annuity where you add a rider.
Such as a guaranteed monthly income benefit, something, right. Lifetime income benefit.
But variable deferred annuities are only one category of deferred annuities. There's also fixed deferred annuities. Fixed meaning the principal is guaranteed. The insurance company guarantees the principal. Fixed in that it pays interest. And the interest will be then added to the principal at the end of each year, assuming you earn interest. And there's different types of fixed annuities. Fixed, where they tell you the interest rate ahead. It either is reset annually, or it has a block, 3, 5, 7, 10 year guaranteed period. Those are called multi-year guarantees. And so you know exactly what you're going to earn, no higher, no lower, over that guarantee period. There are no fees in those. It's like a CD. How much did you pay in fees for the CD that you bought that pays you 1.5% for the next 3, 4, 5 years? There's no overt fee. The fee is what the bank is earning over and above what they're paying you.
In other words, the fee you're paying is what they didn't hand you back as far as an interest rate.
But there's no way to know that.
Of course. Yeah.
You're buying it because you like the interest rate that they tell you that they're going to pay you. And so that's what a fixed annuity does. There are no fees in a fixed annuity. An index annuity without any riders on it, it pays an interest rate. There are no fees on the index annuity unless you add a rider. Now, for way back in history, all we had were the immediate annuities. Then they added the deferred annuities, and they caught on, and they were making. But then, when the interest rates first went down in the tank towards the 2000 mark and 2002, 2003, insurance companies started kind of mixing and matching. They created payout annuities out of these deferred annuities by adding a rider to them. So they said, you can keep your cash value invested in either the index or in the sub-accounts of a variable annuity, and we will guarantee that we'll pay you a payment based on some hypothetical number for as long as you live. And even if you lose all the money in the cash value, oh, by the way, the money you're receiving at first is coming from your cash value. If the cash value goes away, we'll continue to pay you that income for the rest of your life. And so you were able to protect the downside. Most people look at a pool of money when they're retired, not necessarily as a pool of money, but as the income that they can get out of it. And if you can guarantee that income, you can have some options on what you do with the cash value. One of the biggest drawbacks of an immediate annuity is, if I die too soon, my family gets nothing. With this later generation of deferred annuity with a lifetime income guarantee, whatever the cash value is left over, if I died way too soon, at least there's potentially something left for my kids.
Now the reason they can do this and give you some back for your heirs is, first of all, they kept your money for a while. What? Where they're not giving it back to you and they're able to earn something on it, right?
Well, maybe. Yeah, I mean, it depends on whether it's a variable annuity or an index annuity. The reason they're doing it is because they're not paying you as much in a yearly basis as an immediate annuity would pay you. So if you're looking at a 70-year-old, an immediate annuity will pay you more than the one that has some residual benefit left over.
Yeah, because they want to.
They got to hedge their bet too.
Of course, yeah. The more of your money that they keep, the more that they can make.
But it doesn't mean they're bad.
No, it doesn't. All right, going to take some calls when we come back.
I want you to hang on if you're on hold. We're going to get Don in Las Vegas first right after the break, so don't go away, Don. We still have a couple more on hold, and we have three lines open, 877-PLANNER, 877-PLANNER. Ask your money questions. Call now. We'll take them right after the break. Don't go away. Bucket Strategy Investing continues. Taking your phone calls, 877-PLANNER. We'll talk more about these fixed annuities and variable and how they work and give you sort of the overview on them and talk about how they're often marketed as investing in the stock market but with no risk. How is that possible? Well, it may not be possible, at least not what they're telling you. So we'll talk more about that, but I do want to take some calls. 877-752-6637. Lines, just one line open. Fill it up while you can. Let's move along. Don is up next in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hello, Don. How can we help you today?
Yeah, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
I got a question. If I take my Social Security at 62, my full pension would be at 66 and a half. Will I get any kind of increase at 62, or do I have to weigh any of the cost of living? How does that work?
Well, if you start taking it at 62, it's obviously a reduced benefit because you're taking it earlier than your full retirement age. And at that point, you're locked into that benefit with the exception of potentially an annual cost of living allowance. So each year they'll calculate a cost of living allowance and put in, if it's a positive number, they'll add to your benefit each year.
Okay.
That happens whether you take it at 62 or wait until age 70. The cost of living allowance, if we have one. Now, we didn't have one for 2016, and then we didn't have one a couple years back, 2 years in a row. But most of the time, we get at least a little bit of a bump from a cost of living allowance for our Social Security benefits. It's not like it's going to go flat until you get to full retirement age. It does increase every year that there is a cost of living allowance.
Okay, that's what I wanted, because I've heard both ways that you didn't get it, and I know you guys talked about it before, and I just couldn't remember.
Yeah, last year we didn't get one.
I think it was 2010 and 11 we didn't
either
get
10,
one.
11 or 9 and 10.
9, 10,
back in those
somewhere
days.
Back there. Yeah, there just wasn't enough of a CPI bump, I guess.
Right, and then there's some tiers where you really don't notice it because depending upon the size of your benefit, the cost of living allowance where your benefit may go up $20 is eaten up by the increase in the Medicare premium, which may be like $15
right,
or whatever.
So you might see a $2 raise.
You don't see a lot of a raise.
Like yeah. Does that help you out, Don?
Right. Yeah, and do you guys have an office in the Henderson area?
Yes, we do, and we can refer you to the individual that runs that office for us.
Yeah. So hold on a second, Don, all right?
All right, thanks.
Okay, you bet. Yeah, back to offices all over the country. It's kind of convenient for everybody. So, yes. All right, 877-PLANNER. We got a little bit of room on the phones, 877-752-6637. I'll remind you, any money question that you have, whatever it happens to be, if it's Social Security or about these annuities that we're talking about, 401ks, doesn't matter. 877-752-6637 spells out PLANNER. We go next to Brooklyn, New York, and talk with Lillian. Hello, Lillian.
Hi, John.
Hi.
I have a question for Professor Plum.
Yes.
I'm very confused about what to do with my 401k and my TDA. Because I have to take minimum distributions, but a lot of people are saying that we should convert everything to Roth IRAs. But if I do that immediately, I would have a great tax burden.
You're correct. Now, how large are when you say TDA, tax deferred annuity? Is that from a work area, like as a teacher or a hospital worker?
Yes, a teacher.
Okay, so it's a
TDA is worth about 180.
Yeah, and how much is the 401k?
It's $275,000.
Okay, yeah. If you were to convert all of that in one lump sum, that would be a tax nightmare. That would push you well into the higher reaches of every tax bracket, including if you're on Social Security, you would increase your Social Security Medicare premium. So you don't want to convert it all at once. It doesn't mean that you may not want to convert a little bit of it in any given year, and we'd have to take a look at your tax bracket and your taxable income to see whether you have any room to do it on an efficient basis. Your required minimum distribution is probably $20,000 plus a year right now if you're at required minimum distribution age or close to it. And so you have to take that. Now the question is, will you be able to take more than that without creating more taxes than you would pay just on the RMD in the future. And if we can, then we would do some Roth conversion. But doing it all at once would be a very, very taxing experience. Now, Lillian, are you married or single?
Single.
And your income is coming from your pension and where else?
My pension and only about $3,000 from my stock dividends.
Okay, so divs. And how much is your pension?
$79,000.
Okay, so you're already in the 25% bracket, and so you're not receiving Social Security because you didn't pay into it. You have the pension instead, right?
Yes, I'm going to be taking Social Security in May.
Oh, okay, so that's just going to add more income to the taxation.
Yes.
And you can figure that 85% of that Social Security is going to be taxable. So the idea would be to look at these income less whatever deductions you have, and see how much room, if any, you have to start doing conversions. Because we know that the required minimum distribution is going to be $18,000, $20,000. We can look at it and say, okay, that's going to cost you X. Can we take out more than X by converting it to a Roth? And without jumping into the next bracket, because we're going to pay at that bracket no matter what we do, so we might as well pay it now, and then any growth from here will be in the Roth IRA, which potentially will be tax-free, either for you somewhere down the line or for your heirs.
I see. Okay.
But definitely don't do it all at once.
Oh, so how much will I be allowed to move over into a Roth IRA?
You can move over any amount of your accounts that do not represent the required minimum distribution. How old are you right now?
Excuse me?
How old are you?
I'm 69 and a half.
Okay, so you'd be 70 this year.
Yes.
Is your birthday in the latter part of the year?
May.
Okay, so you'll be 70 and a half this year. This year, 2016, is your first required minimum distribution.
I was afraid of that, yes.
So the idea would be to do a little projection, say, okay, here's what your taxable income looks like with the we know what the required minimum distribution is going to be because we know what the balance as of last year was. We know your age. We know everything that's going on. We can tell you what your required minimum distribution is. We take that, add it to your pension. Take that, add it to the dividends and the other things you've got going on, your Social Security that's going to be starting in May. And we say, okay, this is what your taxable income is going to look like. And that means that you have room or you don't have room, and we should do $5,000, $20,000 or some or none from a Roth conversion standpoint.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's not difficult. It's just something that you have to understand taxes a little bit. I know that can be difficult.
You have to do your math and project.
Right. You have to do math. So hopefully you're a math teacher. And you
an English teacher.
Okay. Then we'll help you with the math.
Okay. All righty. So I can move over any amount. I thought I was limited to $5,000, $6,000.
That's only on contributions that you can make from outside sources, putting fresh money into a retirement account, an IRA. And you're no longer working, so you can't contribute new money to a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. But you can convert existing retirement money to the Roth IRA. It's already in retirement accounts. It's not a new contribution to a retirement account. It's just changing the character of the retirement account from a tax-deferred 401k, 403b, TSA, tax shelter annuity, to a Roth IRA. And you can do any amount that you want over and above the required minimum distribution. That is specifically prohibited from being converted.
I see. All right. So I still have to take my minimum, but I can start contributing.
Right, but if we have room to convert, what it does is it reduces the balance of your 401k TDA going forward, which reduces your required minimum distribution going forward, which means you can convert more in the bracket going forward, and so you have better chances of managing assets in the future. It doesn't help you a lot today, but it'll help you manage things in the future. And we also then have to look at who's going to ultimately receive this money, because it doesn't sound like you're spending enough of it.
A member of my family.
Okay, so we look at their tax bracket. Does it make sense, since they're going to be the ones that inherit it, are they in the same or better tax bracket than you, or are they in a lower bracket?
Lower.
Then it may not make a lot of sense to pay a lot in taxes today, because they'll pay less when they receive it.
Oh, I see.
All these things go through the process of determining whether to convert or not to convert.
Okay. I think I understand now.
Okay.
I just have to do the math. Thank you.
Lillian, thank you. Hang on if you need some more help with this, because there is some math involved. So hold on, and we can talk to you maybe a little bit more off the air about it.
But she's doing very well. And, you know, when she called up and said, what do I do with this 401k and tax-deferred annuity? I was like, spend it. Enjoy it. Come on. Go have fun.
Well, but the fact that she's thinking about this now, she's going to be 70 and a half this year.
Yes.
So she's going to have
to. In November of this year.
Right. So she's going to have to take one this year or at the latest by next April of next year.
Right.
So she's got a little bit of time, but not much if she wants to do some of these conversions.
Right. And back when Roths first came out and conversions first came out, we thought about, okay, let's just defer taking our required minimum distribution until next year and do a big Roth conversion this year.
Yeah.
IRS came out and said, no. That doesn't work. Any money that comes out is going to be considered a required minimum distribution first. So you can't convert that, but you can convert in excess of that.
Yeah, which is fine. Okay, hang on a second. We're going to get to more calls. Robbie in Cupertino got a question coming up next. We will get to you, so don't go away. That's an order. 877-PLANNER, just a line open. Grab it while you can. Brain Trust on a roll. Answering your questions when we come back. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. We got another hour just ahead, so stay tuned for more. We haven't really finished the annuity discussion because we're taking calls right now, which is fine. We will take more of your calls, and we may next hour talk a little bit more about some of these annuities, get into the weeds a little bit and explain to you exactly what it is you're buying, what it is that's being marketed to you. So hold on. We got more of that. Robbie, 1 second. I want to remind people, speaking of wealth education and telling you what's really going on, you're going to find out at one of the workshops coming up. That's right. February 20th. That is not that far away. February 20th, Saturday morning in Las Vegas, Nevada. Join the Brain Trust that morning. Still some room left. So if you sign up at wealthed.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com, you can get in and all the action, get your money questions answered, learn about retirement income strategies. It's the 2016 workshops sponsored by Lucia Capital Group. So Saturday, February 20th, Las Vegas. Seattle, Washington is on the 27th of February, and March 12th, Phoenix, Arizona. So Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, the next three. There will be more after that throughout March and April. Go to wealthed.com to find out where they're going to be. And of course, it's all free. 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Back to the phone lines. Robbie has been hanging on in Cupertino, California. Robbie, thanks for hanging on. We appreciate it. How can we help you today?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Speak up a little, but
okay.
We can hear you.
Yeah, so my question is, if I work in U.S. and contribute to my Social Security, but later relocate to a different country, am I eligible to receive the Social Security in retirement?
It depends on the country, and I don't have them all memorized. Some countries you can continue to receive the check. Some countries you have to come back to the U.S. Periodically to be able to get it. Some countries they're just not going to send it to you. I would say Syria and some other ones like that, they're just not going to send it. So, it depends on the country, but you should be able to. You know, as long as there are some rules.
Back to, let's say, India, for example.
Yeah, I'd have to look up how that works. It may be that you have to come back to the U.S. every once in a while to basically, step back foot on the U.S. soil. But we'd have to look up the specific countries. And it also sounds like you're pretty young, so who knows what the rules will be 30, 40 years from now when you're old enough to take Social Security.
Well, wait, how old are you, Robbie?
I'm in late 40s.
Late 40s. Okay, 20 years. I can try to look up India, but there are certain countries that will just continue to send a check, and others where it stops while you're out of the country, you come back and you'll pick it up.
Okay. So it's not like, it gets deposited in your bank account every certain day of the month or something.
Well, if you maintain a U.S. presence with a U.S. bank account.
Maintain a U.S. presence.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what do you mean? You're talking about just have the bank account active, right?
Right, but even then, you still have to be, you have to show yourself, a certain amount of time in the U.S.
Really?
Yeah.
But then, I don't know how they check that.
Yeah, have you looked into this at all, Robbie?
No, he's looking into it here.
No,
well.
No, right now I'm here, obviously, but my question is more related to the later part of my life, when, if and when I, if at all I choose to go back to my, you know, to India, you know, what happens to all the money that I'm contributing through my employment, and, you know, does it require me to be physically here, or maybe show up once in a while, or not required at all? If I maintain the residency status, of course, that is other thing, right? Whether as a permanent resident or as a citizen, whichever the case may be, you know.
Right. Now, when you're talking about going later on, are you talking about going for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, or forever, or what would you be talking about going back to India?
I don't know. It could be like maybe 5-10 years, or it could be just, you know, relocating for good to.
Right. Okay. You don't know. Sure. Yeah. You've got some options for you sometime later down the road, right?
Yeah. Because frankly, you know, U.S. is a very costly country to retire in a way, compared to many other places in the world.
Yeah, it is. You can make a lot, but you can also spend a lot. You're exactly right. Well, I would imagine, Ravi, and Professor Plum is looking it up here. I would imagine that if you were gone and never came back for 15, 20 years, something like that, that there may be something that says, you know, you can't get it until you get back or something. But
okay.
Professor Plum, have you seen anything at all?
Not yet.
Okay.
Working on it. Keep talking. Keep stalling.
Well, there's
for
only
me.
So much, Ravi. I don't know if you want to, you know, hang on or give us a call back. We may have an answer for you shortly. I just don't have it at my fingertips.
As you suggest, I mean, if you want me to call back after a little while, I can do that. Just let me know.
It'd
sure.
probably be easier to call your Social Security office, because they can give you a better answer. This is one area
okay.
where they can.
Yeah, maybe. Just make sure that you have the right answer. But if you want to, you know, check back with us, we'll have Professor Plum sort of dig through. It's hard to do while we're on the program and, you know, do all that. But
sure, no problem.
Okay.
I think the two pieces is, one, whether internationally, whether specific to India, whether you could receive it. Secondly, whether it requires you to show up, like you said, once in a while.
Basically. Yeah. My guess is that if you disappeared for a while and never came back, that they may question it. But again, that's only a guess.
Yeah, maybe they just want to make sure you're still alive or whatever.
Sure, make them, yeah. Yep, come back, you know, say hi to the folks, you know, you know, do a deposit at the bank or something and let them know you're here. And then, yeah, that's only my guess, though. All right?
Right. Okay.
Now, Ravi, one last question. Are you going to be a U.S. citizen? Are you a U.S. citizen?
Right now, I'm not. I'm a permanent resident.
Okay.
I might at some point become a U.S. citizen, but, you know, from a tax treatment perspective, I believe it's pretty much the same in both cases.
While you're in the U.S., it's definitely the same. When you move back, if you move back to India, it's a little bit different. But there are different rules for U.S. citizens living abroad and non-U.S. citizens living abroad. So there are some different rules there, too.
Yeah, okay. If I'm a U.S. citizen, am I treated on par with, you know, the treatment I get here while I'm here?
Yeah, you have a better chance of continuing your benefit if you're a U.S. citizen living in a foreign country rather than a foreign national living in that country.
Okay, got it. Okay.
Okay.
Much. I appreciate the answer.
All right. Ravi, thank you for the call. Good question. Haven't had that question. Seems like we had it a long time ago, and I don't remember what the answer is.
And I've been looking at India is not on the list that will continue to receive the benefit regardless of whether they come back to the U.S. or not.
So what would happen in that case? If you go, your payments just stop until such time as you get back, and they give you your back benefits, or how would that work, do you think?
In India, that I'm looking at, it's not on the second tier either, where you have to...
Really? I'm surprised. India. Wow. With the amount of commerce that the business that's done. Interesting.
Okay. Well, I'm looking through the different lists.
Okay. Well, we're out of time for this hour. We're going to keep Professor Plum on this. We'll report back to you if and when we find anything. If you need the brain trust off the air, you want to talk to Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group across the country, you can reach them at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Another hour is just ahead. It is Buckett Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.